Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Frederick Clarkson, a senior fellow at Political Research Associates and an analyst of the religious right for over 30 years. He has worked as an investigative editor at Planned Parenthood Federation of America, as communications director at the Institute for Democracy Studies, and co-founded the important group blog about the Christian right, Talk to Action. His books include Dispatches from the Religious Left, The Future of Faith and Politics in America, and Eternal Hostility, The Struggle Between Theocracy and Democracy. Welcome to Background Briefing, Frederick Clarkson.
Hi, Ian. Thanks for having me back.
And today, President Trump proclaimed today, January the 16th, Religious Freedom Day. So I don't quite know how to react to that. I don't feel... I mean, this is the most religious country in the world, the most tolerant country in the world. There's no oppression of religion in this country. So why do we need Religious Freedom Day?
Well, partly because Congress requires it. And back in 1991, Congress authorized Religious Freedom Day, and basically the only thing that they required was that there be a presidential proclamation. So that's why that exists. But for Congress, it was kind of a belated discovery. And that is that back in 1786, the Virginia legislature passed the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom, which had been originally authored by Thomas Jefferson, and it was shepherded through the legislature by none other than James Madison, who a few months later went on to be the principal author of the Constitution, and then later the First Amendment. So the Virginia Statute is credited by historians as really being the taproot of the framers of the Constitution's approach to religion and government. So it's truly is something to be celebrated and commemorated and not forgotten in that way. Unfortunately, President Trump has a little different approach.
And which is?
Which is that he has aligned himself with the Christian right and the contemporary efforts to redefine religious freedom in a way that would slant public policy towards their agenda, which is a kind of... exercise in political religious supremacy. So if you happen to disagree with the Christian right about the availability of contraception or the right to access abortion, or if you think that marriage equality is a good thing, you may face various forms of discrimination being promoted by the Trump administration.
So the idea of religious freedom, though, from what I'm getting from you, Frederick Clarkson, is that this basically is a religious right concept based upon the absurdity that the religious right has, this sense of martyrdom and oppression that somehow they're being impinged upon when, you know, mega church pastors are able to shake down poor people for millions of dollars on television right before our eyes. And now, of course, Trump is going to allow them, these mega churches, to participate in politics and remove the restriction in tax exemption that means you're supposed to educate and not advocate under the 501c3 tax-exempt vehicle that all the churches use. So now, again, they're getting everything. So where do they get this idea about freedom? I mean, why do you need to proclaim freedom when it's unnecessary? Because there's no oppression. There's no religious oppression in this country, except perhaps if you're a Muslim, where you get discriminated against under this ridiculous paranoid canard that Sharia law is about to be imposed on us all.
Well, we're certainly imperfect when it comes to religious tolerance and freedom, and but, you know, it's one of the best features of our culture. You know, it's a great tradition and a great effort to promote tolerance and equality and freedom in the way that as a society we've struggled to do. That's absolutely true. On the question of tax exemption and electioneering, so far the Trump administration has not gotten that through Congress. There's been no change in the law. I think that there probably is greater latitude in how it's enforced, but that's a different question. But as far as the issue of religious freedom goes, you know, it's something that is so integral to our history, our Constitution, and our law that it really is something that belongs to the rest of us. and something that we've kind of taken for granted. You know, you don't get to have free speech, you don't get to have a free press, you don't get to have political advocacy and different strong differences of opinion from the government unless you have the right to believe differently from the rich and the powerful, from powerful government institutions and powerful religious institutions. And that's the revolutionary idea that Jefferson and Madison really gave us. So the tragedy of our moment is that there are theocratic forces, you know, aligned with the Trump administration that didn't like that when it was, they didn't like the Constitution when it was written, and they did their best to oppose it, be over the issue of religious freedom. And they want to claw that back, and they're doing their best through public policy to do that now. And it's really important that we all figure out a way to do religious freedom advocacy 21st century style.
So let's go back to the founding fathers. And you talked about the Virginia Declaration, and there was no question about what the attitudes of the founding fathers were. And remember that they were writing this Constitution not so long after the first settlers in America had proven themselves to be religious zealots, particularly in Massachusetts with witch burning, etc. So wasn't that a big part of it? I mean, apart from the fact that the guy that was the kind of intellectual spark of the American Revolution, Thomas Paine, was an atheist, although he sort of died penniless and alone because eventually his atheism became a little embarrassing for the rest of the founding fathers. But in general, my understanding is of history is that Jefferson and company really had experienced, this new country had experienced the worst forms of religious intolerance. And they just wanted to make sure that this country would never become a theocracy.
Well, that's exactly right. And these were educated men of the Enlightenment era, and they knew that what had happened in Europe for 1,000 years. They were aware of the Inquisition, you know, in Spain, and they were aware of the similar kind of witch hunts in England, and what they were aware that the North American expression of that kind of witch hunting and inquisitional spirit inhabited the early colonies. Among the formative experiences of young James Madison, young Thomas Jefferson, were watching the beating and the jailing of Baptist preachers on the streets of Virginia, who were jailed solely for the fact that they were expressing their view of Christianity, which was against the law in Virginia, where the established Anglican Church, the religious arm of the British Empire, held sway. So, yeah, the idea of religious equality, that your religious identity would have no bearing, no advantage or disadvantage in your status of a citizen, was a part of the revolutionary idea of the time. And they knew they were standing in the bright light of history and doing something that they really hoped they could set the stage for something that would stand the test of time.
So what on this day are we supposed to do? People who are genuinely religious, and frankly, I for the life of me cannot understand these so-called Christians on the religious right in this country. Their hypocrisy is so rank at this moment, clinging to this dreadful misogynist, hater, racist in the White House who lies and lies. The Washington Post have done a study that over 2,000 lies since he's been in office. And now he's got Senator Cotton and Senator Perdue lying for him, covering up what he really said in the Oval Office in his insulting Africa, the entire continent, along with El Salvador and Haiti. And we know that the religious right went along with this guy in spite of the Access Hollywood tape where he boasted about grabbing women by the genitals. But now, whatever happened in terms of the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not bear false witness. I mean, why are they sticking with this guy?
Well, power is seductive, you know. There are theological justifications that were offered during the campaign and people will stick to now. The idea that even ungodly men can carry out God's will and God's agenda. And they pointed to King David in the Old Testament, and they also appointed to King Cyrus of Babylon, who assisted the Jews. But that aside, they are willing to set aside morality and doctrine in order to advance their agenda, particularly as it serves their personal interests. The evangelical historian John Fea calls them court evangelicals because they're attracted to the power and they suck up to it, and it's a remarkable thing to see. But there are tremendous divisions going on, upset in a lot of the evangelical world over these very things. And it's, I think, a period of tremendous turmoil in the evangelical community.
So the fact that Trump had his lawyer pay off a porn star $130,000, you think that might be making a little bit of an inroad into the religious rights idea that their president is not entirely living up to biblical values and family values?
Well, one would like to think so, but you know, it's just the same thing we saw with Roy Moore, who was a pedophile and a stalker of, you know, teenage girls in the local mall. People stand by the guy who they think can deliver for them, despite hypocrisies and flaws. Hypocrisy has never really worked as an issue, and the more you attack their leaders, Trump and Roy Moore, on these things, the more likely it is that they're going to hold true to them, because they're really invested in these guys. And, you know, let's face it, Donald Trump is delivering for them in ways that his predecessors never have. So in terms of policy, in terms of administration positions, they're getting more than they ever could have dreamed.
And they got Gorsuch too, right?
That's right. That's, you know, look at the cabinet. You know, Betsy DeVos at Education, Mike Pompeo at the CIA, Ben Carson at the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and the list goes on. There is an attorney for the Alliance Defending Freedom, one of the leading Christian right legal advocacy networks, who just got the top job in the public policy, or rather the public affairs, the PR office of the Department of Justice. This is what an important piece of what the Trump administration is about.
Well, religious freedom is a double-edged concept. It's one man's freedom is another person's oppression. If you're gay and if you're a single woman or wanting to have birth control, or a woman who's been raped and wants to have an abortion, I don't know.
It's That's exactly right. Let me clarify one thing. And that is that it's very, I think, the most helpful thing for everybody to get their minds around, and that is the idea of religious freedom is not the same thing as religion, and it's not the same thing as non-religion. You know, it's a fundamental right to believe differently than anybody else and to change your mind if you want to.
Right.
And that is protected by, ideally, by a neutral government who's out to protect the rights of all.
Right.
So
we should be celebrating religious diversity, not this bogus religious freedom. I thank you for joining us, Frederick Clarkson. I'm sorry we ran out of time, but I appreciate you joining us.
Well, thank you very much, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Frederick Clarkson, a senior fellow at Political Research Associates and an analyst of the religious right for over 30 years. He co-founded the important group blog about the Christian right, Talk to Action, and his books include Dispatches from the Religious Left, The Future of Faith and Politics in America, and Eternal Hostility, The Struggle Between Theocracy and Democracy. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org. We can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.